Blog Talk Radio.
When things are unsure, going from bad to worse, when all Hades breaks loose, well, we can always depend upon George W. being the root of all evil and the sum of all failures, and broadcasting from a rickety, holy, shingle-missing golf shack-sized broadcast booth, Kelly O'Connell, 606. It is the 14th of May, and, well, just real nice outside right now. It's probably the nicest time of the year. And hopefully we're going to get some more, a little bit more rain in the coming weeks. It's 59 degrees right now. It's going to be cloudy today, and 84 the high, so it's pretty warm, and 54 the low. So 4 miles per hour of wind, 65% humidity, and they say 0% precipitation, so no chance of rain. That's what they say. And anyway, so that is what's going on here. Now, I've got the weather guy, Bob Endlich, is coming in the second hour. We're going to do a show with him. But I did want to get into this fact that George W. Bush is the source of all modern problems, which I find very obnoxious. I mean, whether you love him or hate him, and I have mixed feelings about George W. He was at the helm during the greatest modern crisis, and he handled himself pretty well. Now, should he have gone into Iraq? I think most people would say now no, but you know, what can you say about that? Anyway, I've got a little clip here from that debate, that discussion from Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes, I think I've said this before, reminds me of the dentist on The Running Man. I think that's the name of the movie. Or Dustin Hoffman is this Jewish guy, and they capture him and they torture him by drilling his teeth without any Novocaine. And the dentist who's drilling his teeth reminds me of Chris Hayes for some reason. And it's Laurence Olivier, by the way. Very scary role. And Chris Hayes is not scary. He's just kind of a nincompoop. But I've heard he's going to be losing his job on MSNBC because everybody's going to lose their job at some point because that network is doing so poorly. Anyway, here's the clip on George W. Bush and that the outrage over the idea that Jeb Bush would defend his brother.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, I think the to cut this thing off in half, because I can only take so much Chris Hayes, but I think the problem here is that there are people that, number one, don't appreciate the way the president was treated during the Iraq War. Number one, and number two, I think that there is this idea that the gains that we had achieved in Iraq were have been recently, in the last year or two, thrown away. For no good reason, we just walked away from Iraq, and then everybody blames George Bush for what's the bad things that are happening in Iraq right now, such as ISIS. People don't really, people are really on the right are sick deep down of hearing George Bush attack for 15 years. And it's totally mindless. And the question that comes to me is, where would the support for this particular administration be if you didn't have George W. Bush to blame everything on? I mean, and that was the official policy for the first term. Everything bad that happened was George W. Bush's fault. And I mean, if you're the greatest thinker in history, if you're one of the most brilliant people who's ever been born, you can't overcome a bad presidency, right? You know, that has never made any sense to me. The one thing, though, that you can predict, the way you can test to see if somebody's liberal, is you can basically ask a person what they think of George W. Bush. A true liberal hates the guts of George W. Bush. So that's been my observation. But anyway, I think it's time to get rid of to blame everything on George W. Bush. It doesn't really achieve anything. And in addition to that, I think it's patently false that everything that George W. Bush did was wrong, and everything that is being done now that is negative is a result of George W. Bush. It doesn't make any sense. It's a nonsensical direction to go, and it's lacking leadership, and I thought this a long time ago, but it just seems to be going on and on. So anyway, let's Kelly O'Connell here. It's 6:15, 523-1450. If you want to bash George W. Bush, call in. But I mean, everybody's heard the whole thing, what an idiot he was, what a mistake Iraq was. I think Iraq will go down as a mistake in history, but Every president makes mistakes. You know, George W. Bush is not unique in stupidity or mistakes or anything. He did a lot of things right. And there's nothing to be gained by turning on your own and consuming them, which seems to be a Republican specialty. Anyway, we're going to have Bob Endlich on in a half an hour or 45 minutes. But in the meantime, got some good stories for you. And AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. We will be right back. It got stuck. I hit this button and it turned into like a cross. I don't know what it, but it was kind of just stuck there, and I had to hit it two more times for it to play. It was just kind of, well, the music didn't play, so. Yeah. The stop sets, they don't do anything. Those stop sets don't do anything. It goes into that AM Las Cruces, whether they're there or not. So it lets me see what's going on the board. Did that start? No, because I was distracted by trying to hit the thing. I don't know.
Sorry.
I don't think it happened, but I can't verify it. Sorry. Good morning. It is 59 degrees out. It's pretty nice. It's about 65% humidity out there, so they say no chance for rains today. It's pretty nice out. So have you any further thoughts on Brady and his punishment? Four games. I think it'll be reduced to two games. And do you think that it's going to permanently stick in people's minds as who Brady and the Patriots are, or is it just going to be a bump in the road? Obviously, when they found out previously before the Super Bowl that he had deflated the balls, there was no admission, and then he won the Super Bowl. So I've got a little clip here. Brady needs to come clean now. What do you think? It's the subterfuge that always gets these guys. I think that we kind of covered that ground already, but here's the thing. I do you believe that it would be better for Brady to fight this thing and pretend that he's being, you know, he's kind of outraged that the punishment does not fit the crime? Who was the guy that Cain and Abel? Cain slew Abel and then said the punishment was too great. But I just think that the more people see Tom Brady resisting this thing, the more they're going to say he doesn't get it. The Patriots don't get it. It's the most storied franchise in modern football history, and they still refuse to admit they ever do anything wrong. They've been fined $1 million. They lost a first-round draft pick, et cetera, et cetera. They lost their star quarterback for four games. Maybe it's better just to take your medicine. And 5-2-3-14-50. I think this thing is over, though. I think it has sunk in that the reputation of the Patriots is on this particular Patriots is always going to be that they're not playing by the rules. All right, there was something that caught my eye, and I had told you guys about this conversation that I had with a friend of mine, Beckett Cantley. He's the guy that came on and talked about how he believed the government was using these wilderness areas and, national parks, whatever, various definitions that they use for these things where you're taking stuff off the grid to be used by people. And he thought that the government was trying to control the amount of petroleum products and precious metals and rare earth metals that were coming out of the ground. Now, I was talking to him the other night, a couple of nights ago. He told me that, and he works in, it's not reinsurance, but it's captive insurance. And if you look up captive insurance on the internet, you'll run into his name. And I don't even know what the technical definition, let me look it up for you, captive insurance. But it's a specialty market, but he knows a lot of people on Wall Street. And he said it is a given that the economy is going to collapse because of the amount of pumping that the Fed, the amount of artificial money that's been created by the Fed is so large, and it's devaluing all of the dollar holdings across the world. And so countries are moving out of dollars and they're moving into other things. Now, captive insurance companies are insurance companies established by a parent group or groups with the specific objective of covering the risks to which the parent is exposed. So it's kind of like reinsurance, or it says here, self-insurance. So anyway, he's saying that the economy, in his opinion, is going to come apart at the seams, and it's going to cause a worldwide collapse, and that it's other countries are going to suffer worse than we do, but he said everybody's going to suffer. Now, you've got a report here from the Business Insider. The world economy faces, quote, a titanic problem. And chief economist Stephen King, not the author, says he's very fixated on the next recession. And he says here, quote, the world economy is like an ocean liner without lifeboats. If another recession hits, it could be a truly titanic struggle for policymakers. And this is what he has to say in addition to that. Whereas previous recoveries have enabled monetary and fiscal policymakers to replenish their ammunition, which is basically the money that the government has to deficit spend, Keynesian deficit spending, this recovery, both in the U.S. and elsewhere, has been distinguished by a persistent munitions shortage. This is a major problem. In all recessions since the 1970s, the U.S. Fed funds rate has fallen by a minimum of 5 percentage points. That kind of traditional stimulus is now completely ruled out because we're loaning money at, or have been money loaning money, if I'm not mistaken, at 0%. And so what will trigger the next recession? And everybody knows, anybody who's paying attention, business people that I talk to tell me this all the time. And anybody who pays any attention, knows anything about the economy, knows that we've never truly experienced a revival in the economy. It's always been, in the last 7 years, since 2007, it's always been a very fragile economy. It's been underperforming. They say the unemployment rate is 5%. That's impossible. You've got a large number of people who've stopped looking, who are now living off the state, the government, what have you. All right, so here is the thing that he believes, Stephen King believes, will or could trigger the next recession. Wage growth will hurt corporate earnings and reduce the share of corporate profit contributing to U.S. gross domestic product. So households and businesses will lose confidence in the economy, and the equity bubble will burst with collapsing stock prices. Okay, that's one thing. And the reason that stock prices have gone up so much is this artificial spending by the government. They're spending $85 billion a month buying government stuff, government bonds and such. Here's another thing that could trigger this collapse. Non-bank financial systems such as insurance companies and pension funds will increasingly not be able to meet future obligations. So they're overcommitted and underfunded. This will cause a huge demand for liquid assets, meaning cash or assets that can be moved, forcing people to rush to sell despite no matching demand, triggering a recession. And then forces beyond the Federal Reserve's control, including the possibility that China's economy and its currency could collapse. Weak commodity prices could also cause collapse in several emerging markets, as could continued strength in the U.S. dollar. And then the Fed could cause the next recession by raising interest rates too soon, repeating the mistakes of the European Central Bank in 2011 and Bank of Japan in 2000. So what am I trying to suggest from this article? I guess what I'm suggesting is the economy is a lot more fragile than the administration is letting on. Previous resources that we had to sop up a recession, deficit spend, and to play with interest rates are not available because we've overspent on deficit spending. This new Janet Yellen, the head of the Fed, has not cut back on QE, which is quantitative easing, which is a kind of a sexy name for the government directly investing into basically pumping. It's pumping. It's money pumping. It's the creation of false currency. And it used to be done just through printing currency, but now it is to the point where they're just creating numbers on a computer and then sending those numbers to banks. It's a very desperate situation because it's created a false economy, and none of what I'm saying is controversial, really. There might be a disagreement on what the impact will be, but this is all known stuff. It's created a false Wall Street, stock market. It's really a dangerous situation, and so we're much more fragile. And so anyway. I just wanted to pass that on. Let's take a break here. It is 6:30 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. And we will be right back. Hey, it's Kelly here at 634. And I've got a little something I just found for you conspiracy nuts. Russian caller calling into the Alex Jones channel claiming Jade Helm is preparations for financial collapse. And Jade Helm is this military exercise that's being done throughout the West with special forces and people that are undercover. As you know, I've been a little bit skeptical of Jade Helm being the end of the world, but here's a little bit from this Russian caller that I thought you might find interesting. All right, so there's one guy's theory, one guy that lived through Russia. Now, chances are, you know, probably not anything to do with that, but there's a lot of people that have been talking for years, and I've heard the conversation about how the FEMA camps and the military buying up the bullets and trying to take away guns, and you know, then the government comes in and takes away the Oregon Mountains from use by the, you know, the local people to the extent that we had any land rights there. The government making a lot of big decisions. Now, on one level, what is feeding into this is the government appears to be making decisions that don't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to support Arab Spring when Arab Spring is leading to these new Sharia-friendly regimes in Libya and in Syria and Iraq. It doesn't make any sense to go into an area where you have an ally, whether the ally is perfect or not. You have somebody that you can count on, Musharraf or in Egypt, the leader in Libya, although the leader in Libya, a little bit crazy, but he had become somewhat of an ally of ours, and now he's dead. You know, the leader of Iraq that was a captive area, and here I sound like I'm criticizing George W. Bush and kind of contradicting myself. I don't think that going into Iraq was the greatest strategic decision, but I think it's totally pointless and ridiculous to spend all our time blaming everything on George Bush. It means we're looking in the rearview mirror instead of seeing what's in front of us. You see the government making erratic or totally incomprehensible decisions. It gives people the sense that either there's no one at the wheel or that there are plans going on that are opposed to America's traditional interests. People are scared. They want to have answers. They want to figure out what's in the future. 523-1450 to call in, by the way, on this. But I think one of the things that's driving the industry of conspiracy theories is that people don't feel like that they understand the decision-making by the government. This massive influx of illegals means that we're going to lose our identity at some point. They don't understand that because we're the greatest country in history. It doesn't make any sense when ISIS is in the Middle East killing Christians when we've got the greatest military in history and could go wipe them out pretty easily. It doesn't make any sense when people hear the president is a Christian and doesn't seem to pay any attention to Christian torture and killing in the Middle East when we could easily go take care of it, at least some of it, and do so, legally. So there's all this stuff that's going on. That's why when Terry is doing something like Jade Helm, they're having this massive exercise. They want to know why, if the military is organized enough to run a program like that, an exercise, why don't you deploy the military on the border to stop the illegals from coming in when some of them are from MS-13, this world's worst gangs. Many of them are felons. So anyway, the chaos of bad decision-making or questionable strategic vision is feeding into this sense that everything is lost, that the government has abandoned the American people, And just like locally, nobody can understand Billy Garrett, his decision. When you're selling the tax increase on making the sheriff's department stronger, better, safer, better funded, for that not to go through and then for there to be a fake $4 million put into the budget, people are they're beside themselves with the bad decision-making that seems to be happening at every level. So anyway, that's why I think people are buying into this idea that Jade Helm is more than just a military exercise. They feel like the country is totally off the reservation, is totally off the paved road, and is just kind of like careening through the wilderness. And at some point, there's got to be a collision with something, you know, or going off a cliff or something. And many people on the right and in the middle believe that the government is being purposefully, the country is being purposefully sabotaged so that we can move into something more to the left. That's what a vast majority of people are afraid of in this country, who are conservatives, who are Republicans, who are libertarians, who are centrists. That's my opinion. That's what I've observed. Kelly O'Connell, and let's take a break here. You're listening to AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. Get your opinion on the record, and we'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, it's Pat. How are you?
Hey, good, man. What's up?
Not much. We're all set for today, right?
Yeah, we're just taking a break right now.
Okay, good. I'm all set. I'm all set as well.
All right, cool. So how's the weather?
Oh, weather's okay. Not too bad. I actually like the New Mexico morning because it's kind of like in the mid-50s, and then it gets up to like 70s and throughout the day, and it's kind of nice in the spring, I think.
Cool. And so what you're doing for the party has changed a little bit?
Well, right now, so, I mean, when I first started doing these radio interviews and stuff, I was working for the governor's campaign.
Yeah.
And now I'm the spokesman for the state Republican Party. So I'm the communications director now for the Republican Party of New Mexico. I basically help, you know, all Republicans now instead of just where I was working to reelect Governor Martinez, right? So that's really the only thing that's changed.
So how do you compare living here with Chicago?
The weather here is way better. I don't have to wear a jacket ever here, in my opinion. I don't have to deal with snow. I don't have to deal with traffic. So I like all that aspect. Food here is different. I miss Chicago pizza, but I definitely like red chili a lot as well. So
yeah,
it's kind of like when one thing goes away, one thing comes in.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to look me up if you come down here and we can go have some lunch.
Absolutely. No, for sure. I really can't wait to get down to Las Cruces. It's just I have to wait to see what's going on our end. And then, I definitely will be giving you a call when I head down.
Cool.
I'm not sure exactly when yet, but we'll have some events down there, it's coming up.
Hey, we're on the air.
Excellent.
Kelly here in 6:46. It is 59 degrees, high of 84, low of 54. I've got someone who's called in. It's Pat Garrett, and he's the state head of the Republican Party. Good morning, Pat.
Hey, Kelly, and yeah, so I'm our communications director. How's it going?
Well, same thing to me. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
All right. So we had talked about you coming on and discussing some stuff, and you had asked me, well, what did I think that the listeners would enjoy hearing about? And I'd said, well, you know, economics is a big deal. The economy is kind of underperforming. We've got this struggle down here between these people on the progressives and the business community. The business community wants to grow the economy, but there's a lot of empty buildings down here. Growth is very slow. The taxes are going up, and I think a lot of people feel desperate towards growing an economy that would be big enough to keep the young people in town.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, and as we know, you know, New Mexico's economy is also heavily reliant on Washington spending, our labs, military bases, and for jobs, really. And I think last year we even had a study that showed that New Mexico was the number one state relying on the federal government. And so when we have this mess in Washington, it's really hurting us in New Mexico. And that's why this legislative session, we're working on a few things to accomplish this goal, diversify our economy, make us less reliant on Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Now you're from back east in Illinois, and I guess the economy is bad there. In the city of Chicago has been reduced to junk bond status. Chaos in the economy back there. And so what can we do differently to not follow that model?
I think one of the most important things is obviously reforming the tax code and then, you know, reducing this red tape that is strangling small businesses here in New Mexico. We need to level the playing field for these small businesses. And that's really where New Mexico can move forward in terms of its economy.
Yeah. Okay. So what is the party working on?
Well, for example, this past legislative session, we were able to pass a budget. We were able to get Democrats on board with this as well. Increased resources for the Main Street program. It's going to develop economies throughout New Mexico by revitalizing these downtowns. In 2012 alone, we saw that the Main Street program actually created 622 jobs. So this is a proven job creator. We're putting more money towards it. And the other program that we helped fund is called JTIP, which stands for Job Training Incentive Program. And that's another economic development measure. It helps get small businesses the resources to hire and train new employees. And that's going to really help close the skill gap, really help these businesses expand in terms of hiring.
All right. That's good. And so do you guys spend much time talking about the South down here? You know, how do you see the economy down here?
Well, I think everywhere across New Mexico, there's room for improvement, especially in southern New Mexico. And what's really unfortunate is we've had some proposals that are designed to also to reform the tax code, which would obviously bring more small businesses down to southern New Mexico as well. Representative Terry McMillan had a bill that was part of this bipartisan tax package I'm referring to. We had a bunch of other ones as well. So, you know, having representatives coming from those areas as well, we know what obviously everyone knows about the situation across the state. And so it's really would be ideal if we can get some of these things that we left on the table during this past legislative session, if we can get some of these things done, that would be very ideal for southern New Mexico as well as across the state.
So are you going to have a special session?
Well, it's you see the news and then you think one thing and then something happens and you think the other. And honestly, if we do have one, hopefully it will have this bipartisan tax package on the table. And just so your listeners know what this is, it was a bunch of proposals from Republicans and Democrats trying to reform the tax code, help bring small businesses into the state. And again, it goes back to leveling the playing field for the small businesses here as well as bringing new ones in. This went alongside the capital outlay bill, which we've all heard a lot about, which will also, you know, produce more jobs, assuming we can get that through. Hopefully what we'll see is a special session that has both of these proposals voted on and we'll get them through. Because, again, bipartisan support for the tax package. The capital outlay bill was, we had a mess, obviously. Assuming we can get a deal, then, yeah, obviously we'll have a special session.
All right. Now, if the party addressed anything in the state to improve the economy, what do you think the top? I know we've been talking about this, but just to let people know, the top priorities.
I think the top priorities for the Republican Party is to elect the leaders that we think will push for common sense reform in terms of restructuring our tax code. Restructuring our tax code is going to be number one. Number two is obviously getting rid of this red tape. Doing both of those things will allow us to diversify the economy. It goes back to the fact that we've been too reliant on Washington, D.C. spending. So if we can get rid of, if we can get more small businesses operating, hiring, then when Washington, D.C. continues to be the partisan mess that it is, we're not going to feel the effects like we did years ago when they had budget cuts and we had the recession. That's our main concern.
Okay, and now can you give an example of how the tax code is harming New Mexico?
Yes. So if you look at, and you have to look at what's called the sales force. It's Conrad James had a bill in the bipartisan tax package to get rid of, to simplify the sales force thing. And then what it does is we have like three tiers, and it's hard to explain to go completely in depth, but we have three tiers here where most states only have one or two tiers. And so by putting us through more and more tiers of, okay, it makes it harder for us to encourage businesses to come here and hire more employees. It's a very, like, I just gave an elementary explanation of it. I'd have to get someone on here to more explain it, but yeah, it's a complex tax code will hurt small businesses because they're less likely to show up here. And the ones that are here are less likely to hire.
And the regime or the history of New Mexico has maybe been to make money out of taxes as opposed to growing the economy?
Well, I think to some extent, yes. And for so long, remember, our jobs, especially, you know, we have that big military base in Albuquerque. You have the National Laboratory. Like, we've just been so reliant on using the government for jobs. And, Republicans, like I said, reduce the tax structure or reform the tax code, reduce red tape, and, like, get government out of the way for small businesses here in New Mexico to operate.
Yeah.
That's really what's going to happen. And we've actually seen some good success. Like, yesterday, the Associated Press even reported that the money coming in from income taxes is offsetting that reduction that's coming in from the oil companies.
Yeah.
And it does show that people are working. Now, that being said, there's a giant pin that needs to be put in there because there is a lot more that needs to be done in terms of fixing this economy. But it shows that there are incremental steps being taken.
Well, that's good. And now, how is the red tape? Do you have any examples of how red tape slows things down? I mean, everybody knows that it does, but do you have any examples in mind?
Well, I think one proposal I just think of right away is workers' compensation legislation that was sponsored by Representative Rush and passed the State House, unfortunately died in the Senate. And it had to do with workers' compensation and what would happen if an employee was harmed on the job when they themselves were under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
Under current law, they can still receive 90% of their workers' compensation, which I think a lot of us, actually 70% of New Mexicans would agree that is outrageous. That needs to come down.
Yeah.
So we had a bill that would have done that. That's not only producing accountability in the workplace, but that's helping these businesses not be saddled with costs when their employees face an injury. And we're not saying that workers' compensation is bad, but it's just if drunk or high on the job, then those benefits need to come down.
Absolutely. We're about out of time, so I appreciate you calling in. Anything else?
Well, I just want to say that, Republicans here were working hard. We're trying to get more people into the legislature elected to build on the success we have. Representative Terry McMillan's doing a great job. Representative Zimmerman's doing a great job. We need more leaders like them sent to the Senate and reelected back in the House. So I hope your listeners understand the importance of that so we can build on our success and keep New Mexico moving forward.
Thanks a lot, Pat. We'll get you back on again soon and see what kind of progress we're making, okay?
Absolutely, Kelly. Thanks so much for having me on.
You bet. Have a good day. All right, folks, let's take a break here. We'll be right back. 6:55.
Do you know what kind of...
Folks, thanks for joining me on this first hour on AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. Kelly here, and something interesting, just briefly, almost all of the leaders who said that they would meet with Obama at Camp David for his Gulf summit have dropped out. There's only two leaders coming out of, I think, six. And what if somebody asked me what that says? To me, it says that Obama's not respected, he's not seen as a leader, and that, the foreign countries do not see him the way that we do because he's constantly propped up in the media. I think he's seen as erratic, unpredictable, and not a good ally. That's my impression. All right, we'll take you out of here at 6:59 and be back, and Bob Endlich is going to be in here to talk about weather and that type of thing. Believe it or not. leave that open. Good morning, Kelly, 706 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. There was somebody that was calling in the last hour when I had the guest on, Pat Garrett, and I couldn't take the call. But if you have any statements or questions about the economy or anything else, call in 523-1450. Got Bob Endlich here on with his twice monthly weather report. But first, a few headlines for you. Texas landowners paid to give up property for troop training. Defiant rancher refuses to surrender his home. Rogue military drone lands in man's backyard. There's a lot of fear and discomfort with the Operation Jade Helm in the West here. And Nancy Pelosi is predicting that the Republicans will lose the Obamacare case. In the meantime, Karl Rove says, stop trying to cancel this program. Just let nature take its course, and it will fall under its own weight, that the Supremes are going to throw it out and it's going to collapse. Although it seems to me that the number of people in Washington that are elected GOP members are the air has kind of gone out of the balloon a little bit in terms of replacing this thing. Secret Service agent is retiring in the midst of a probe being conducted at the White House. And there's been a lot of problems in the Secret Service, as you know. Being stressed out is actually good for you. Bring it on. You find out about stress when you get in the legal profession. They're reporting now that you can inject drugs directly into the brain. So isn't that nice? And all right, so anyway, good morning to you, Bob. Bob is, you're looking like the wizard over there, kind of working on your equipment. What's going on?
One of the things that struck me this morning when I went outside to look at the weather.
Hopefully not lightning.
That's right. But it's remarkable, if you'll think back, how different this year is from last year. Last year, we had almost no rain. From like February on to June, almost none.
Well, and what do you expect when global warming hits, Bob?
Well, that's what I want to talk about a little bit. The reason that this year and last year are so different is because this year we have a misfired El Nino event. Now, normally when there's an El Nino, that's when we have very warm waters off the coasts of North and South America and Central America.
And what causes the El Nino?
Well, that's if any of your listeners have ever been to Hawaii or, like me, went to Guam or Wake or Kwajalein or things like that, we have about 20 degrees north a band called the trade winds, where the winds are always out of the northeast, and they're very, very persistent. In the southern hemisphere, there is a parallel, but it is a flow from the eastern Pacific to the western Pacific. And that flow pushes water all the way across the Pacific. So actually sea level out near Indonesia is about 18 inches higher than it is. As that water moves across the Pacific and the sun shines on it, it heats up the water. So there's typically a warm pool in the western Pacific. Something will interrupt the trade winds, and those normal east winds will falter, and sometimes even west winds will come in, and that warm water will come across the Pacific from near Indonesia and come all the way across to the coasts of North and South America. The best example of that, for the old-timers who have been here a while, was 1997, 1998. If you remember, right after Christmas in 1997, we had a lot of snow in the Oregon Mountains, and that snow stayed well until February. And that was one of the great years where we had a lot of water. And so that year-to-year variability from almost no precipitation to very strong winter wet, that strong winter wet is an indication of a strong El Nino. This one misfired.
Now, when you say it misfired, what happened?
Well, normally what happens is when that warm water reaches a maximum, it's around the time of Christmas. It's the northern hemisphere winter solstice. And so the existence of rain along the coast of, for instance, Chile and the coast of South America was a rare event. Sometimes it only rains once every 10 years or something like that. But when it rains, the rain occurred right around Christmas time in the north, you know, Christmas, which is the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere. That's a classic El Nino. This one has not fired correctly. There were predictions that the drought in California was going to end, but it has not ended. It's because this is not a classic El Nino, and that's why I call it a misfired El Nino. But on the other hand, that warm water from the Western Pacific has spread across much of the Pacific, and since the Pacific is the largest ocean of all, we have indications of high surface temperatures that have been carried in the news. I think there is a slant there to try to help the president with this proposed climate treaty in Paris in December of 2015. Certainly AP and Bloomberg View and Bloomberg News have carried this as an indication of man-caused CO2-fueled global warming, but clearly it is not. It is a misfired El Nino.
What do you think the chances are that this drought in the West, and especially California, is going to linger for years? Do we have any way of guessing?
That's a really good question. And I don't have a good answer for it. But I will tell you that the present drought in California mimics the one of the 1990s. I don't know if you remember, but there were times in the early 1990s, 1991, when Santa Barbara ran out of water, and people were painting their lawns green, and people were going to extraordinary measures to conserve the water there. Also, in the 1930s, there was a drought. Certainly, we had the Dust Bowl years in the central part of the country, in the east part of the country, but it was not all that copiously wet, and California has a drought. And we have records of that. So in terms of the 100 or 125 years that we have rainfall records, this drought is, there's no doubt in California, it's a bad drought, but it is not, in terms of the instrumental record, not as bad as the ones from the 1930s and the 1990s. But we know what's causing it, and it is what we call the blob. The blob is an area of abnormally warm water from the Gulf of Alaska down to off California. And that blob of warm water allows the air aloft to be heated. And so we get a tendency towards northwesterly winds. And northwesterly winds in the western part of the U.S. are dry winds.
Interesting. So the blob is no longer Rosie O'Donnell.
Well, I think we have an existence of two blobs, at least in this case. But the one I'm talking about, you can see, now we have satellites, and so that satellite information is available.
All right, so we're talking to Bob Endlich and talking about the blob and global warming and El Nino and the recent rains, and we're going to come back and dig into that a little bit further. Kelly O'Connell, 715-523-1450 to call in. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. We'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and have Bob Endlich. And Bob, so let me, I'm just hoping in my mind, and maybe it's my past days of growing up in the state of Oregon, but I'm dreaming of a wet spring into a wet summer. Any chance?
Essentially, the answer is no.
Ouch.
But we don't typically get, the climate that we're in is typically, it, in the classic sense, is a winter wet, summer wet. Sometimes the winter wets aren't very wet at all. And a year ago, from 2013 to 2014, that was extremely dry, you know, and we didn't get the snowfall in the mountains. There's almost no precipitation. And then once the spring warming happened, there was, last year, I'm talking a year ago, there was almost no cloud cover. Now, this year, we had earlier in the week, we had quarter to half inch rains in many areas. as that first system came through. And now, you know, yesterday went clear, and now we have middle and high clouds. So that's another system coming. And so there is a pattern that is very abnormal for this time of year for the springtime. And that abnormality is these traveling storms.
Okay, that's very interesting. Let me ask you this. If global warming was supposed to bring in warmth, and warmth causes more water to evaporate, wouldn't global warming cause more rain?
There's a good answer to that. And we have 2,000 years of rainfall history from the tree rings from an area near the ice caves near Zuni and Gallup, Grant's area. What it shows is that the wettest years in the last 2,000 years was the 20th century. And in fact, the last part of the 20th century was by far the wettest in the last 2,000 years.
So we've adapted, in say, in California, to a much wetter climate than is typical. And so maybe California has misplayed its hand up to this point, you know, and instead of like conserving this water and learning how to save it, they have used it all up, and now there's none for the dry days.
That's one way of putting it. You could also say the same has happened in New Mexico.
Why do you say that?
Well, I say that because we have all of these housing developments, and we have oversubscribed the amount of water that comes down the Rio Grande. In the early part of the 20th century, we had this compact with Mexico, so we promised them an amount of water based on what they knew 100 years ago. But now we know that there are these periods of excessive rainfall and drought. And those are in 60-year patterns. The 60-year pattern corresponds with what we call the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is only discovered like in 1997, 1998. But now we know that that warmer typically is wetter for New Mexico, although we have gone into a dry PDO period right now that mimics what we had in the 1950s when Elephant Butte almost dried up.
Well, let me ask you this. If given your knowledge of these things, if you were the weather or the water czar for the state for the next 10 years, what changes would you make to make us more drought resistant?
Well, it's obvious. If you drive from here to Los Angeles on the 8 or the 10, you're going to go across the Central Arizona Project, and you're going to cross the California Aqueduct. So it's obvious that that those states have these large systems that bring water from the wetter areas to the drier areas, from the river.
From the north to the south.
That's right. And in New Mexico, we have no...
Well, what if somebody said, well, we really don't have the resources to have an aqueduct? It wouldn't mean anything. What would you say to that?
Well, I would say all you have to do is look to our neighbors to the west, to Arizona, and our senator from New Mexico grew up at the knee of Morris Udall and Stuart Udall, who were the godfathers of the Central Arizona Project.
I wonder if he ever got kneed in the head.
I don't know, but he's never mentioned it. But clearly, you know, it's obvious to anyone who drives from here to California that you can see this stuff. I mean, there's this huge aqueduct. And New Mexico has no such and has no plans for it.
Okay, all right. So where would that water come from in the north? Where would we get it from?
Well, you have to say that perhaps we might work with Colorado and create a dam on the Arkansas River. That might be one, but maybe it's not from the north. Maybe it's from the south. Maybe it's from making friends with Mexico and having a nuclear power plant that we would jointly fund and pump water uphill from near Puerto Penasco to New Mexico.
Let me ask you, didn't you mention last, folks, we had I gave a speech last night on the Second Amendment at the Tea Party, and Bob was there. Are you the one who mentioned this large saline reservoir underneath where we're at?
I didn't mention it then, but certainly we have in these, like for instance, in the Tularosa Basin. Tularosa Basin is full of water, but it's salt water.
So what could we, you know, they desalinize this water out of the ocean. Could we meaningfully desalinize this stuff and use it?
I think the answer is yes. I think the answer could be taking some of those nuclear reactors from the decommissioned submarines and aircraft carriers that are up in Hanford, Oregon, and creating additional pilot plants to try that out, for instance, in the Tularosa Basin and in these balsams that have the brackish water. That would be a good start. Certainly, Governor Martinez has emphasized that we need more water infrastructure, but what I think is New Mexico needs is what I call a big water project to bring it from the Gulf of California or perhaps even from the Gulf of Mexico, build a desalinization.
That's a long haul, though.
Well, I understand it's a long haul, but New Mexico has built, and we are oversubscribed. And if you think this drought's bad, you should have seen the drought back in the 1600s when the Abo Mission was built in 1620, and it was refurbished in 1640, but they had to ban it in 1675 because during the Little Ice Age, it got really, really, really dry in New Mexico. The records show it.
Indeed. Okay, so what are we going to talk about for the rest of the show?
Well, I'd like to talk about some of the data from the satellites. NASA has these satellites, has a great constellation of satellites up, and there's some interesting information that the writers from AP and UPI and Bloomberg don't get and doesn't appear in the Sun News or some of the other publications. So that's the information I'd like to talk about.
All right. Talking to Bob Endlich, he is a weatherologist, meteorologist. But you don't study meteors.
We don't study meteors, but the meteorology comes from stuff that comes out of the sky, like meteors. But
hopefully rain.
That's right.
In the near future. 726 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. And we will be right back, and we're going to, well, we got a little local news here for you, but we're going to hear about this constellation of satellites. Very exciting. Be right back. It's Kelly here. I want to thank the Ross and Builder Supply for sponsoring the show. We've got Bob Endlich here. He's a meteorologist. And we were going through a few things prior to this moment, talking a little bit about El Nino and the drought and how we could revolutionize water in the state, which, according to Bob, could include piping it in from the ocean, which might sound a little suspect to some people. Anyway, Bob, you're bragging about your constellation of satellites.
Well, NOAA and NASA have satellites in the sky, and they make that data available. You hear people make pronouncements. You see people like Seth Borenstein from the AP make these pronouncements. But I don't take the pronouncements for very much. And what I do is I look at the data.
What's a typical pronouncement that you would not think much of?
Well, one of the ones I'm looking at right now is that 2015 is on track to be the hottest year on record.
Are we going to be going around in, shirtless with little kind of grass, are we going to be, living like people in a tribe or something? It's going to be so hot?
No, not a bit. And what is not said in this Bloomberg article is it's hinted at the warming that they're seeing is the warming of the ocean from this El Nino I was talking about in the previous segment.
Well, the problem with, and you got to admit this, the problem with global warming is it seems to explain everything at the same time. Every single thing that's an anomaly, that's out of the ordinary, people think is out of the ordinary, is immediately attributed to global warming.
That's right. And it's that at that moment you should reach for your wallet, because those are not scientific pronouncements at all. it's sort of like blaming it on the boogeyman or La Llorona. You know, well, it's, you know, the leprechaun's doing it. Well, in this case, we've got the boogeyman, and he's carbon dioxide. And if you think about it, you know, if you go back to even in your grade school stuff, when they had those terrariums that had the turtle and the plants in the sealed terrarium, and
sure.
They, you know, well, the turtle breathes out carbon dioxide, and the plants take the carbon dioxide and turn it back in oxygen, and we have this cycle.
What you're saying is we, to save the Earth, we need more turtles.
What I'm saying is that when we were at the meeting last night, I had some enchiladas. So the enchiladas have carbohydrates. Carbohydrates, all of the carbohydrates in all the food we eat come from carbon dioxide in the air.
I thought you looked a little heavier this morning.
That's a massive problem, isn't it? But in any event, the thing people don't realize, you say, we're talking about greening. Well, carbon dioxide is causing greening of the earth.